here.
Blog Talk Radio.
Get up and get us.
And George and Preston and Peter will be talking about it.
Well, so, correct whatever it was that we said that was incorrect, George, in the introduction.
Please,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, what the Philadelphia experiment was all about. And, you know, it was, yes, the... hello, are you still there?
Yeah, we're here. We're just calling Preston.
Well, it's, you know, it's an experiment, Tesla's experiments with electromagnetics. It's invisible to radar. I mean, it was one of the earlier technology, you know, dealing with radars and incorporating it into not only our military means, but also our daily lives when it comes to sonar and radar and higher forms of frequency.
Yeah.
So what happened is that they built part of machines on this ship, and when they flipped the switch, it went into hyperspace, and it transmuted time, and it went from 1943 to 1983. And I think this is where we'll pick up, you know, with the Peter Moon and with Preston when they...
I'm just a
hi, Preston, how are you?
All right.
Witness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good evening, Preston.
Good evening.
Hi, Preston. I'm with Leo. This is Lila, and we have George Dixon on the line.
Okay.
And George is just getting us up to speed on what happened with the Philadelphia project. So, George, would you just continue a little bit there?
Well, I was just explaining, Preston, what the Philadelphia experiment was about. And other than, you know, it took place in 1943, maybe you can continue from here, but two people, Duncan Cameron and Al Bielek, were the ones that were involved that went into the future when the ship went into hyperspace.
Mm. Well, you're doing fine, George.
excuse me. What happened is Duncan stayed into the future, and Al went back with the ship when it went back to 1943.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe, I don't know that how long they were here, but I know there was like a 3 or 4 hour disappearance that happened to the ship, the Eldridge, in the Philadelphia Naval Yard. And I think that's why they call it the Philadelphia Experiment, because
correct.
It was in the Naval Yard that they flipped the switches, and that's where supposedly the ship became invisible, and it just went into hyperspace, and then it returned 3 hours later.
And
now, you know, I'm not sure on the statistics on that. I think Preston would be more of a person to answer, but that's basically the gist of Al Bielek and the Philadelphia experiment.
Now, let me see if I get this straight, George. Al Bielek returned with the ship to the correct time, 1943, right? And Duncan Cameron, his brother, stayed in the time 1983?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that correct,
now,
Preston?
Yep.
Okay.
Now, does Duncan Cameron have any memory of the Philadelphia Project staying in 1983?
He has some.
But, you have to get a background on Duncan Cameron and Al Bielek.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly they were brothers, and they worked on the experiment back in 1943.
Right.
And apparently, you know, I think the project was a continuation of a project that was put together years before by other people. I think in reading the Montauk series, it will explain, you know, the relationship between Al and Duncan and also Preston Nichols.
Right.
No.
So, Preston, how did you happen to come along in all of this?
How did I get started in it?
Yes.
Yeah, how were
yes.
you involved? How did you know Al Bielek and Duncan?
Okay, I first, in my regular memory track, first ran into Al Bielek at the 1983 Conference of the United States Psychotronics Association. And somewhere in the middle of the country, I don't remember exactly where it was at this point. And, you know, we both, Al and I, had an interest in psychic activity, technology, electronics, and all that. And we hit it right off at the first conference then. The second conference is when I had Duncan Cameron come along with me as an assistant to help set up some demonstrations at the Psychotronics Conference. And Al told me in 84 that when he first saw Duncan Cameron, he knew right away he knew him, although he didn't really remember why at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, at that same time, I didn't know of my own personal involvement in the Montauk Project, although Tom Bearden at that time in 84 took me aside and told me basically of the Montauk Project and said, look, Preston, be careful how you experiment with this psychotronic technology. It can be very dangerous. And that's when he told me of the monster that came out of a psychic's mind and started to destroy the experiment. At that time, I didn't know I was involved. I believe he knew I was involved, but, you know, it went on from there.
Now, Preston, did Duncan recognize his brother, Al?
Duncan told me that he knew he was connected to this guy. He really didn't like him, but he knew there was a connection, but he didn't know what the connection was at that point.
Oh, okay.
Then when Duncan and I started to do work on the psychic stuff, you know, initially I started to go on a treasure hunt to retrieve high-powered, high-voltage electronics out of the old radar setup at Montauk Point. I didn't even know of the Montauk Project at that point. And that's when I had Duncan out with me, and he first started to read of the Montauk Project as a psychic read. And he told me that first time that I was involved. And I said, huh? Of course, I haven't recalled it yet.
Yeah.
And over the next couple of years, basically, Duncan and myself, we were doing reads from what we both called the psychic source. And the psychic source also told us that Duncan Cameron was part of the Philadelphia experiment and that Al Bielek was part of the Philadelphia experiment and that they were half-brothers.
Really?
And basically, we didn't tell Al right away. Both Duncan and I wanted Al to recall it on his own. Now, the story that Al tells is one night he was in a motel watching TV, and the movie The Philadelphia Experiment came on, and he watched it, and as he would say, it hit him like a ton of bricks. He at that point realized that he was part of it. He recalled some of his part, and then he called me and told me that that he was part of the Philadelphia Experiment, and I said, yes, Al, I know you were part of the Philadelphia Experiment. He said, how'd you know that? I said, well, Duncan read the same thing, that both he and you were part of the Philadelphia Experiment.
Hmm.
And, of course, Al recalled more and more. Al built a legend out of his own research on who was behind it, starting with Nikola Tesla going up to the 40s.
Wow.
And, you know, the story goes on from there, and then he of course, picked up on his own involvement, that's Al, in the Montauk project as well. So Al, myself, and Duncan, we were all... Actually, I wasn't involved with the Philadelphia experiment myself. I was involved with the Montauk project, but Al and Duncan were involved with both the Montauk project and the Philadelphia experiment.
So what really did happen to them? I mean, the story goes that they jumped when the machine, the time machine generator, started to go haywire. And they saw themselves vanishing. They immediately jumped off the ship, and that basically is what saved them from getting melted into the actual metal, so many other
crew did. That is true. Although not everybody on the ship got melted into the metal. But
right.
Basically the two men jumped off and met with Dr. Von Neumann, who ran both projects.
Huh.
And, the story goes on. And basically, Duncan stayed in the present. And the story goes that he was put in another body. That's why they're technically half-brothers, because Al Bielek, who was Edward Cameron, had a different mother from Duncan Cameron, who is Duncan Cameron today, because the body Duncan came through and his whole structure became unstable. He was aging extremely fast, so father... Duncan Cameron Sr. was requested to have another kid. He did, the Duncan we know today. And the original Duncan Cameron was inserted into the new Duncan Cameron's body. And hence, Duncan grew up all over again as a baby. Now, Al's story is that somehow Dr. Von Neumann took a liking to him personally, and said that he didn't like to have to do it, but his body was going to be age regressed back to a baby, and he was dumped into the Bielek family and grew up again as Al Bielek. He was dumped in 1926 and, grew up till he died recently.
And were you in contact with him all this time, Preston, or...?
Yeah, sure. Al and I talk quite regularly, although the last year or so, I would call him, and half the time, he didn't know who I was.
Oh. I know he had moved to Mexico, is that true?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, did he have family or somebody down there? Or?
No, I think he went to some sort of a health clinic who was going to try to make him well again.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, that's a shame.
That's too bad.
But I don't know, George, did you have any, Preston, did you have anything more to add about Al? And Peter hasn't called yet. I thought Pete was going to give us a call tonight, but he hasn't. In fact, I probably I have his number.
Maybe you could give him a call.
Did you tell him we would call him, George, or...
No, I believe that I gave him the phone number. He was going to call like he did last time by himself, independently.
Yeah,
okay.
That's what I thought.
Well, we'll wait a little while.
Now,
was Al Bielek involved in any other experiments after the Philadelphia and Montauk projects? Were there other things that he was working on, Preston, George?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, I neither. I know he did. He did a lot of traveling and lectures, and talking about it, and also research too. Al seemed to be a very thorough man, in his research, and it seems like every time I talk with him, he's found more information or more connections that he can relate to, and I know for the later years he was involved with Phil Schneider. I know they buddied around the country, I think, in different lectures. And Phil Schneider talked about the underground bases and how he actually had a firefight with the aliens, and he was almost killed himself. And I believe that he had the fixation that they were out to kill him, and eventually, apparently he died, and, you know, there was some speculation, the possibility they just wanted to get rid of him. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I know Al, in his journeys, met quite a few interesting people, and including possibilities of his real family. And I think Peter Moon in the Montauk series gets into some of the synchronicities that he's found with Al's story and some of the people, not only in this generation, but the generation before. And maybe once he gets on the line, he can verify some of this. But, I have to say that I admired Al for who he was. I mean, he was his own person. And even though there was a lot of questionable things to question, it's like he was on a roll, and he knows, he knew a little bit more than I did, that's for sure. And I don't take sides in a sense where, you know, I believe everything that he had to say. Is it true? Is it false? It's not for me to say. And,
No, George, on the Philadelphia Project, for you and Preston, really, that particular experimentation, number one, is anybody else picked up where that left off? And number two, if they didn't, do you think that that's where it should stay, that no one should be doing that?
No, the work has continued, and
mm-hmm.
David Anderson has the proof of that. I mean, and actually copywriting a time procedure where they can slow down time or speed up time. And
mm-hmm.
I think Peter Moon will be able to talk about that because he came back from an exciting trip to Romania. This is his second trip, and once with David Anderson. And Peter has done a lot of work, I think, in continuing the theme of time machines. And I want to jump back if I can, because my relationship with Al goes with the early relationships with Preston, with Duncan, and it was, I think, in the 1989 Psychotronics Electromagnetic Girlfriend Conference, Grossman Conference in New York City, where I was brought in when this information was being released to the public. I was brought in because of my relationship with the extraterrestrials and the knowledge of the extraterrestrials. So it's like I have been following the whole story right from the very beginning, and it's been surprising for me, but also an education. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm surprised by what I've seen.
I think we should mention, maybe we can ask Preston this too, since he was somewhat involved. What were the many levels and the many areas that Montauk was involved with? I mean, I know they were involved with mind control techniques, experiments, electromagnetic frequency experiments, psychic experiments. What were the many things that they did there, and what did they eventually achieve from the experience? I know, and is that whole area closed down now? That's all the same.
Oh, you're asking me?
He's asking you, Preston.
Okay.
That was an awful lot of questions. Maybe.
Yes, I know.
Basically,
out at Montauk Point, it was a carry-on of the Stealth Project, which evolved out of the Philadelphia Experiment. It
mm-hmm.
was noted that the human beings were sensitive to electromagnetic radiation, which up to the Stealth research, human beings are thought to be immune to it, insensitive. and the project was launched to see what would happen if you could control how people think. They were looking for what we call a general control, where they could transmit something out and everybody within range of it would respond to it. They actually, what actually was developed out there was essentially a mind amplifier. It had a Montauk chair that an adept would go into a trance and would be told to think of one thing, only one thing. And then it had technology would pick up that thought, and then it would transmit the technology out onto the background ethers. And the thing literally developed the capability of being a manifestation device. That if the sensitive in the chair had the capability in his mind of envisioning something complete enough, the machine would manifest that thing. And the next thing we knew was manifesting time travel. Was literally opening time tunnels and time portals. Until at the tail end, it was decided by a small group of us that the project was headed in a negative, bad direction. We crashed it by bringing a monster out of Duncan's subconscious and manifested it, and it trashed the project.
Amazing. What?
But the government now and other people have picked up that information and worked with it?
Oh, I'm sure they have.
Now, are there other are there other monsters or entities that are coming, have been released onto into the world?
I don't know. I don't have any precise information on that. I'm pretty sure accidents have happened. You know, when you do research that is this avant-garde, and this advanced and this active, you know, amount of activity, you're bound to make mistakes. And if you make a mistake with a manifestation device, God only knows what's going to come through it.
Oh, that's for sure. So,
have you been able to get a hold of Peter Moon?
Well, we were waiting for him to call. If he doesn't call, Leo's going to give him a Leo will give him a try now.
In about a half an hour.
I think that would be a good idea. You know, for years I've talked about the Montauk chair, and you know, I haven't really gone into detail about that, but understand that the psychic or the person sitting in that chair was very powerful, and you had like power amplifiers hooked onto him, for it manifested his thoughts. It's like a psychic who actually was able to manifest.
We're giving him a call now, George. That's what you're hearing.
I think that's what was so unique about it. It could actually produce the thoughts of the operator.
You should have picked up by now.
You've reached Sky Books, but we're not in the office right now. Please leave your name and number and state it clearly, and we'll call you right back. Thank you very much.
When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Yeah, hey, Pete, it's Leo with the L.A. Steel Show. I've got Preston and George here on the line waiting for you to join us. Number is, the call-in number is 646-915-9505, 646-915-9505. 915-9505. Hope to hear from you shortly. And
sounds like he's not home.
Yeah, it sounds like he's not home.
Yeah, I don't think he's home.
If he picks it up, he'll call in. If not, you know, we'll speak with Peter another time. But let's go back right now and continue our thoughts. And I'd like to add something. We've talked about this a couple years ago.
Wait,
we were talking about producing those Merkaba field.
Okay, George, just a second. Leo wants to ask you something.
No, I think I've got him on the line. I'm just going to start. Are you with us, Pete? Peter.
Okay.
Okay, I don't know why that's.
Would his number be who's 516?
No, that's his number. That's
Peter.
681-0273?
Yes.
Yep. Well, we have that line on.
But I'm wondering if he has us on mute or something. Pete, if you can...
No, we heard his message machine.
Well...
Yeah.
That's true, but it's still going. Usually I would hang up by that. Well, I'm going to hang up, and then I'll try him back again later. I'll wait till he...
You pressed the wrong thing.
No, I didn't.
Hang on
a second. Hang on. Okay.
Just
according to that, it's hung up, so we're going to wait and see if he calls back. What I wanted to just ask you is just to kind of bring us up to date on this project. Preston, I'd be happy to have you come in on this. These experiments that kind of went awry. What kind of monster did they bring up? I remember in the book, and I forget which one it was, Montauk Revisited or the first one, that there was actually a picture taken of this monster coming out of the ground.
Yes.
It
looked like a Bigfoot.
Like a Bigfoot.
Yeah, it looked like a Bigfoot.
You saw it?
There's a pretty good picture of it in the Montauk Project Experiments in Time book that was taken by a psychic photographer by the name of Jan Bryce, who is now deceased.
Oh.
And I also made a videotape out there that we got the monster on video off of the roof of the radar tower. That is available on Montauk Tour number 2 from Skybooks.
Oh.
How did you get rid of it?
Well, I was told to go and shut down the transmitter, and eventually nothing would shut it off, so I had to go literally cut it apart with a acetylene torch.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And that got rid of that entity?
Yeah, when the transmitter stopped working... You know, when the system shut down, the entity froze and then faded back into the ethers.
Oh.
And it's still seen from time to time.
Okay.
Really?
It's, whatever it is, it's stuck between our realities.
Oh.
And a number of different people have reported seeing it out of Montauk Point, you know, seeing the Montauk Point Bigfoot.
Ah.
So it's kind of, he's still zipping in and out of reality, out of dimensions.
And some people have reported having it approach them, and they could hear it breathing, and I think one person said that it actually touched her.
Oh.
But Peter would know more about that, because he's the one that got these reports.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Did you ever see the entity, or just saw pictures of it?
Oh, I saw it when I was involved in the project and shutting the transmitter down.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Did it scare you?
I don't know. I was just more concerned, okay, this thing is here. What do I do about it?
I'd have been
and
gone.
I was figuring, okay, I threw all the circuit breakers. I actually disconnected the line coming into the place. There was no power coming in, and the equipment was still running. Of course, where is the power coming from?
Yeah.
And that's
that's
when I decided I had to actually go and cut the transmitter apart.
Wow.
And on Montauk Tour number 1, you'll actually see the burn marks of where I did cut the transmitter apart. You know, there's torch marks all over the radar tower inside.
How did they bring this thing to life anyway? What was the experiment they were doing?
Well, as I said just before, a small group of us who were involved in the project decided the project was going in a bad negative direction.
Right.
It was going towards a direction where it was going to be. You know, raping mankind, not for the good of the earth and the good of mankind. And we decided it was time to bring the project down. And a number of us came up with the idea, let's surface a monster out of Duncan's subconscious, because he was the main guy that sat in the Montauk chair, laid in the chair, however you want to put it, and generated the thoughts. And my recollection is I went up to the chamber, turned on the mic and said, "The time is now." And Duncan was programmed, if you want to put it that way, and when he heard the phrase, "In the trance of time is now," he'd bring the monster out of his subconscious as like a vision, and then this equipment had the capability of making that vision real.
Oh.
And that was electromagnetics?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, actually, we like to, the true term is electrodynamics.
So basically, He was projecting this from his subconscious into the
universe.
A television of third dimensional TV or something, I don't know, into a third dimensional reality.
Well, he was projecting it into the hologram that our reality is. He might have even been projecting it into the computer that runs our galaxy, known as Citros, because Duncan was the first one to pick up on the computer that runs our galaxy and our reality as Citros. And it turns out I have research recently that says, yes, that computer actually exists, and we're like a video projection of that computer.
The Matrix must have been based on that information.
It probably was.
Boy, that touched a nerve when I saw that movie, and Reloaded as well. It was just a phenomenon that kind of just said, "Wow, this ability," you know.
Preston, talk a little bit about that master computer. What did you recently hear about it or read about it?
Well, I've been researching.
Yeah.
You know, what is at the center of our galaxy?
Yeah.
This character that calls himself Preston of the Future, which all indicatives is that he is me out of the future, handed me this recording by Justin Haywood, known as Broken Dreams. And at the end of this recording, there's this droning sound. And he told me, Press of the Future told me, that this was our reality ending. At that time, he said it was September 27th, 2012. And I'd been vision questing, so I vision quest into the end of to that droning sound at the end of the recording. Sure enough, it was at what is now known as the Times Union Arena, where that recording was made, or that's what I picked up on. Exactly how true that is, I don't know. Justin doesn't know for sure either. Basically, I found myself at the galactic center. I first saw a vortex with a white hole on one end and a black hole on the other end, with the black hole and the white hole locked on each other. And we could look at it as an energy accelerator. And of course, to make a long story short and not go into tons of mathematics and science, if you have a function that is dynamic and driven by power, you got an intelligence tied to that function. And as far as we're concerned, this is an infinite intelligence. And I actually reached I projected myself to the center of the galaxy and was talking with this intelligence. It identified itself as the name Tabor. And I found there's actually a second one that also is Ra, or the god of Abraham. That one identified itself. And I realized at that point, this is the reason our religious base is so confused. There isn't one god, there's actually two of them. I've been since trying to figure out, okay, there's no question something's coming. And with the advice and help of the what I call the galaxy critters, I've been researching deeper and deeper into it.
Hmm. So what do you think about the...
And basically, the first thing I noticed, these creatures, these critters, both had mechanical voices. This struck me as kind of odd. Then I've had a number of friends that tell me we're living in an artificial reality. I saw a three-part TV show which essentially, circumstantially on the soft side, proves that this is a artificial reality. And then I asked the critters, what is Cytros? And then I got the whole story that 10 million years ago, the Sagittarian galaxy was invading the Milky Way galaxy. This great war broke out. The powers of both galaxies realized the war wasn't getting anywhere. So a truce was called, and that the two great powers built this super-duper computer system generating millions and millions of simulations. And that over the millions of years, we've come down to 7. Now we're down to 4 or 5. And the thought is, the one that finally ends up being the one that goes down to 1, that's the solution to the war. And I've done programs describing this, and there's 2 pieces of music I use to witness to reach these critters. One is the Justin Haywood Broken Dreams, and the other is a classical music piece, Smetana's Mob Lost or My Fatherland. And it turns out that Smetana had a beyond and back experience, and he wrote My Fatherland. Actually, you know, My Fatherland is heaven and God. And I had a European guy call me up and say, you talk to Tabor, as he said, Tabor the Great? I say, yeah, I can reach Tabor the Great. He said, I knew it as Tabor. And in the Yugoslavian, Croatian part of the world, Tabor is God, which means Smetana's Mob Lost has a section called Tabor the Great. That's the conversation that that Bedrich Smetana had with God. And I can use that to reach whatever this galactic critter is. And to me, so far, it looks like this God, or these two gods, are files in the supercomputer known as Cytros. And that we're all a projection, a holographic projection out of this supercomputer Cytros, which that TV show was called Through the Wormhole, I think pretty much proved it in satisfaction to me, adding my own experiences to it. I think we are in a simulation and that it's about to come to an end.
And do you think that that would coincide with the Mayan calendar?
Very possibly. Although right now, this end appears to be about 2023, not 2013, although everyone else says 2012.
Right.
If you work out the mathematics, 2012 actually is...
I say it's 2011 now.
Well, actually, it's 2013 is the actual date, not 2012.
But for all those thousands and thousands
of years, 1 year off for 26,000 years, that's not bad accuracy in my book. That's good enough for government work.
And that's
what is it, Leo?
Yeah, Kellerman said that he was saying the exact same thing when he decided it was October 28th, the 11th. But he also said that, this is Kellerman, the Mayan expert, also said that the universal consciousness was to be created on October 28th. That's the end time for the unveiling, right? That's when the awakening begins, and it moves along into December 21st, 2012, and that's what his states. He also stated there's a possibility of extending to the 2013 period too, but essentially there had to be a beginning. There had to be, according to the prophecy, there has to be an awakening of a global awakening of consciousness, then upon that, then the world will go through its correction or its polar shift, if you will, and whoever survives, I guess, is gets whatever's left. And those who don't.
Let's not forget about our friend Al, because I think Al said, Preston, you were telling me that. Al says that when I go, it's all going to fall apart because I'm holding it together.
That's what he said.
He said that Al Bielek said that once he died, the whole world would go, because he was the one that was.
He was the one that was holding it together?
That's what he said.
What did he mean by that exactly? That it was his vision?
Well, he believed that he made the time trip from 1943 to 2750 something, maybe mid 50s, and that since he made that trip, that he is involved in keeping our reality together. Al said all along that we're living in an artificial reality. He told me that the first time I met him, and that he was holding the artificial reality together. That was his existence. He actually expected to live to the 2700s.
He did?
Yeah, he actually said he was going to live to them. But he said if he dies before, our reality is going to start to crack up and fall apart. And close as I've been able to figure out, he probably died last Monday or Tuesday, as far as I can figure out, talking with different people.
Okay.
His niece Dee, I never got to talk to her, so I don't know exactly what happened. But Duncan Cameron called me up the day after George called me and told me that Al died and asked me what was going on, that he felt a major disturbance in our reality. And I told him, well, Al died. And Duncan at that point said he didn't know it. So something happened. If Al died Monday or Tuesday, something has happened, because it seems Tuesday night. Yeah, this last Tuesday night, I went into the ethers again on a vision quest and found out that two or three of our seven parallel realities have dropped out of existence. That we're now running four or five parallels, including ours. It used to be seven. So something happened early this week that was a major event in the cosmos, if you want to call it that.
So you're saying that we have, what, five left?
Four or five. I'm not sure which.
Oh.
I've only looked at it once this week.
Are these dimensions, or are these...
These are parallel realities, parallel reference frames. Right now, it's very hard to project out. Because I believe two of the realities that shut down is the reverse function on my sound system, which is what I use to Vision Quest.
Yeah.
Ever since this happened, Vision Questing is very difficult. The way I do it. This may be why, Leo, you had an entirely different effect today from when you last tried it.
That's right. No,
things have changed.
I agree. I was accepting that today. To fill everybody in, Preston has this remarkable machine that he's created, and it develops Well, it's well,
my
sound.
It's friend
sound,
explain it.
Sound meditation, and you can lay on this, and you have the this incredible whatever music you choose, you can play with that. And I happen to have today a series of drum. Indian drum solos or Indian drum songs, and I had that before, and I had a tremendous vision, and then this time the vision was more stifled, but yet I kind of understood it, because it's the way that I've been constructing walls, if you will, resistance. I guess, in my life, in the last year. And I think that was what it was telling me, was that, you've established some boundaries here that you didn't have last time. Maybe because of my health reasons or, whatever they were. But something came into play, and I could tell that from the effect I was getting on the machine. And the vision that was coming to me, which was quite unusual, and quite informative, not so much dazzling as informative, and I feel that it had given me something that I needed, something I needed to have absorbed. And I was so grateful that I had a chance to do that, Preston. And I'm hoping Lila is quite frustrated she didn't get a chance to do it.
I have to work for a living.
but hopefully she'll get a chance in the near future.
George, you're pretty quiet. What's your take on all this?
On what? I find it all amazing. I really do.
Well, on what happened to Preston when he's gone to the future, and when he went to see what the center of what's happening. What do you think about what he thinks is happening to what our world really is?
Well, no, I'm looking at it a little bit differently, because we've been talking for years about fractal consciousness. And how, where everything is happening at once. So regardless of what string that you believe, it is happening. And, there's like 1,000 different strings or leads that are being played out right now. And, it's amazing how they synchronize with one another. So that's what I was thinking. But, I find it funny because of, not funny, but it's amusing, I think, because of what we've been exposed to, dealing with the Matrix on the movie scene screen, and some TV shows, take Star Wars as one example. Who are we, or when do the Jedi Knights come into view here, the powers within, and fighting the artificial reality, because we are talking about something that is not artificial, but it's not in our time. So you would say it is artificial for us now.
Well, my question is this: why is there so much death and destruction and misery and suffering for so many billions of people? Around the world, I don't understand this. If we get the, what is keeping us imprisoned here? The fear of nature, I guess. A fascinating thing happened this
week.
Well,
let somebody answer your question.
I was just making a statement that a fascinating thing happened this week I don't know if you read about the thing in Ohio where they. The guy killed himself and released 50 exotic animals, lions and tigers.
That happened yesterday.
Yeah, happened yesterday. But it turned out they were showing it on the news tonight, and they had killed almost all of the animals. They shot them all, and they had them all piled up in carcasses. And it's quite a horrendous picture to see.
Yeah.
You know, and compile that news item with the death of Gaddafi in Libya, where they showed him getting beaten by the mob and very literally torn apart by the mob and the rebels. And you saw this horrific vision.
It's horrible.
Compile that with the slaughter of the
beautiful exotic
tigers and lions and
Bengal tigers,
bears,
leopards,
and all in one area. It almost seems like it's a frightening omen of the future. To see this
savagery,
right, being played out on the same night, all right, on the mainstream media, by two separate occasions.
What's your point?
Well, my point is essentially that is that reality? Is that something that's actually
or is that
somebody projected thoughts of horror or horrificness or whatever? And are we to are we being held back by our by these projections? These things of war and murder and mayhem. And it's all the news projects. Are we being imprisoned by that? Do you feel? So that we can't move on the way we're intended to.
What do you think?
Move on to a different dimension.
Well, my experience with researching the galactic critters is that Tabor, that's the god of Christ, and then Ra is the god of Abraham. If you look at the Bible, although it is the word of these gods, it's confused.
Yeah.
If you look at the God of Abraham, he's a testing God. He's a God that's sort of on the nasty side. And then you look at the God of Christ, God the Father is peace, love, and everything good. So right now, if you look at the Bible with not in faith but actually analyzing what is written there, there is a duality, no question.
Oh, absolutely.
And this whole reality is a duality because it's being driven by two separate concepts. One that is fair and evil. Not evil. I wouldn't call it evil. I would say it's more like a little bit on the nasty side. when it wasn't happy with what Sodom and Gomorrah was doing, it literally blew Sodom and Gomorrah off the surface of the earth.
Right, it's not like they give them a chance,
Right.
But
one strike and you're out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, the God of Christ or Tabor, this God is total forgiveness.
Yeah.
This God, even if you're the nastiest person in the world, if you were Gaddafi or Hussein, if you repented, this God would forgive you. The other God, Rod, would destroy the two evil people.
Yeah. The only irony really is that, the great irony is that the Christ was crucified.
Mm-hmm.
So as a victim of the system as it was, which is just about as violent as it is today.
Yeah, that's the duality. Our reality is driven by total opposite dualities.
Wow.
Almost like there is a single God, and there's a bad side and a good side to the single God.
We have Pete Moon's number here is on. Pete, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm glad you could join us tonight.
Sorry, I'm late.
That's all right. We
glad to have you aboard.
Hi, George. And Preston, yeah. So, have you been following the conversation for a few minutes there? I wonder if you have anything to add to that.
No, because I don't. I know you're talking about the gods of the Bible and Egypt and stuff, but I don't really have enough context to know what you're talking about.
Ah, okay. Because we know that we talked about your book earlier about the synchronicities that you wrote about, and how they brought you to the to all the aspects of your life actually till now, and writing about these things. And I was hoping maybe you could just give us our listeners just a brief summary of your involvement with the Montauk Project and Preston and George, and then. We could go on to your latest book, which fascinates the hell out of me, and I've been wanting to. I couldn't wait to till you got back from Romania to talk about it. Please just briefly encapsulate your involvement with the Montauk projects
and Al Bielek
and Al Bielek and so on. Yeah.
Well, I'll do it as brief as possible, but. Coming to Long Island was the fulfillment of, I guess, a major decision I had made in 1983, which was to help dissolve all hurtful mechanical conditions of existence, which was, to me, a very high spiritual level. Of all the places it led me to was Montauk. I then got married to a girl who was from New York, moved up here, and the first time I ever met Al Bielek was in the presence of Preston Nichols and Duncan Cameron, and they were telling all about this story. And when I left that building that night, I said, something went through my head. Now I know why I came to Long Island. It was to do this work. And, of course, so I heard Al talk about the Montauk, with his participation in it to some degree that night. But sometime later when I did the right after I did the agreement with Preston to do the Montauk book, Al was coming to Long Island, and he arranged for me to take Al to Princeton University and the Institute for Advanced Studies, where he would look for any evidence of his previous life as Edward Cameron. And so he says, just tell me everything. And Al talked a lot, but one of the things he focused on were the mysterious Anderson family, who were specialists in time travel. George Anderson, he said, was the man who had given Preston the sort of clues as to how to get on the base and he was the caretaker of the base, so he could allow Preston on and off, maybe not officially. He says, just go get this and do this. And he said that there were two Anderson twin brothers in Nutley, New Jersey, who mentored him and took care of his education. He told a very far-out story about the Anderson brothers who went to a New Hampshire spaceport and went to their home planet of Alpha Centauri, which he said George Anderson was from too. Now that was very far out stuff, but in August 11th, 1999, when Preston and I were giving a talk, primarily Preston, at Laurie Saluzzi's house in Belmore, David Anderson walked in that night, and that sort of has taken me to my further adventures in Romania, which we've talked about before. And, you know, the only thing I will say is I've just finished last night reading Radu Sinemar's third book, A Mystery of Egypt, where he talks about this Christ stuff. And since you're on the subject of Christ, you know, that kind of might, you know, maybe two cents in there. It's very controversial. Pardon?
I'm all ears.
Okay, anyway, what was interesting in the experience is what happens is they go to this tunnel in the Buchegi Mountains. There's the three tunnels, and the third tunnel is the one to Egypt. And it's the most, well, they couldn't call it the first tunnel, but this is the most modern and high-tech tunnel. And it's actually kind of like a space-time distortion. The other tunnels, he says, are just regular tunnels. This one is accelerated by some sort of spatial distortion. It's a much more modern tunnel. They get in a some sort of car that I think it's been created for this purpose by the government. And it has all these amenities and stuff, and they travel at a high speed, maybe 100 miles an hour or something, not terrifically high. And when they get there, there's a chamber with a device that's got a big ruby crystal. I can't describe it exactly. I've only read the book one time, but it kind of has these bands and crystals in them, and it resonates with the body, particularly with the area of the throat chakra, And the Caesar, who learns this sort of intuitively, realizes it's a time travel device when he first does it. And he tells one experience he had. That's all. We're only treated to one experience. And when he first gets on it, he goes back to the time of Christ. And when he goes back there, he is, you know, sort of superimposed. He's not in the environment. He's sort of looking over the environment, and he can understand the words. He can understand the emotions. And he says it's very emotionally loving. There's a quite a loving atmosphere generated around by the character we know as Jesus or Christ. And it reminds me of a, I have to wonder if this is being psychotronically induced, this love energy, but people are completely overwhelmed by it. And of course it makes him popular, and it also makes him hated. He doesn't go into all the details. And what's very interesting is that in one lecture, there's a character who shows up who's dressed a little differently than everybody. In other words, his pants go down to his knees, or his garment goes down to his knees instead of his ankles. And he sort of sticks out like a sore thumb, and he's sitting out by the side, and he's very discordant. And Christ says to him, he interrupts his talk and says, "You're too early to do what you're supposed to do." In other words, the guy's there to assassinate him. It sounds very similar to the Stuart Swerdlow story told in Montauk Revisited that Preston had first pulled out of Stuart Swerdlow, of Stuart going back to kill Christ. And it was similar, but the character does not fit Stuart's physical description. He has blonde hair. So, I mean, it was kind of an interesting similarity. And I know that when Caesar, the character, first heard that Radu was writing to me or whatnot, he made mention of the Montauk Revisited book because he'd read it. And he thought that was very interesting, the period of going back to Christ. And it's basically, it's kind of what I would say, hard to reconcile that they did these things. But he also says that the access to certain areas of that time period are blocked. They're blocked. So, you can't go anywhere you want in this time device, in this particular time device. And it makes me wonder if the whole experience, which is a biofeedback system, I should talk to Preston about it sometime, is being, you know, manipulated or manipulatable, because it's obviously more than just manipulation, but it could be, you know, manipulation. So the Christ story is a central theme of this new book, and I can't really agree with it or disagree with it, but it's right on the topic you were talking about it, and it does feed off of what you guys were saying earlier. But also, one of the things that Preston used to say many times when, you know, we would have our discussions writing books is that the energy of the Christ and the Antichrist was a big factor in Montauk in studying the interaction of those two energies. And It's a fascinating topic.
It is, yeah.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah, I'm amazed. You have obviously did you take much film footage there? Did you do a documentary or did you do a?
Well, I guess we haven't spoke since I came back this summer. I took as much footage as I could. I guess the most interest. I took some more footage of the Sphinx. And the most interesting place I visited was what I learned from the Sphinx. It faces north, and then to its left or to the west would be two big rocks. I had people from Bulgaria and Romania up there all meeting together. And we had another group of Romanians I met 2 years ago came up and met us with other people. So we had a whole contingent up there. It was kind of neat. And at one point I had a 10-year-old girl translating for me, because the group I was with didn't speak English, part of the group. So they pointed out to me that there were these two doorways through these stones, which I took footage of. They look like stones, but they said, these are doorways, and if you look at, yeah, and they point down the mountain, and at the bottom of the mountain is a cave. And this cave, which I went to, you take a cable car, you can walk, but you can take a cable car, for $10 or $20, whatever it is, a round trip down the mountain. And it's very beautiful. And you go into a cave, there's a stream, and inside the cave. There's a monastery in front of the cave and then a chapel right in it. It's a big cave. It would be worthy of the Bat Cave. It's so big in the beginning and to drive a car into. But then it narrows down. It's lit pathway with some wood pathway to walk on. And I went down deep. I took video footage of a night vision. I've only seen it once at somebody else's place, and I don't know how well it came out. You can see my friend talking, but it goes deep into the center of the, or well, actually to the center of the earth. I think it goes about a quarter of a mile, and it's an adventure. And there's a pool or a lake in there, and there's a running water. But when you get to the very end, you can't go any further unless you have special shoes or clothes. And one of the men I met there said he went in 80 yards past that, and then you need spelunking equipment, but it never ends. When I got to the Atlanticron camp, one of the ladies told me that this is the biggest state secret in Romania, not that particular cave, but out of these caves that go along the Carpathian Mountains, which are known as the Transylvanian Alps, is all sorts of UFOs buzzing out of there. And it's going in and out, and she said, "This is and the culture comes from the inner earth. This is an ancient culture, and this is a big state secret. Now, why it's a big state secret, I don't quite get, but it's a very active culture, and it's something that's kind of invisible to our eyes." Leo, if you can send me your email, I'll send you the newsletter because I did a whole thing that explains.
George sent it to me. Forwarded it to me.
I gave him a copy.
Oh, great. Oh, great.
That was very good. Yeah, very, very good. I read it. And, but, so you've gotten, how far, you finished the actual third book reading it?
I finished reading it and started, putting it in, I have to put it into its typeset format, so I'm working on that now. I hope to have it released in about January.
Sounds great. I'm looking forward to it. Really.
Yeah, me too. Not to give up the story there, but I wanted to know, are the same characters involved?
Yidim is not involved. What happens is Radu is in the apartment of Eleanor, the alchemical lab and all this sort of stuff. Doesn't have access to the lab, but he has access to the library. He's reading a lot. And I guess one time he's in his regular apartment at home, and he gets a call from Caesar. He hasn't heard from him in a long time, and he says,
right.
Can I talk to you? I'm not far away. And he says, oh, I've just been thinking how bad I wanted to talk to you. So that they meet up, and Caesar basically, there's a lot of the discussion they have in parlay, which is always very fascinating, talking about synchronicity and how important it is to put to trace the elements of synchronicity and see the underlying meaning. And
Caesar had already gone. Now he went into the center tunnel, right?
Yeah, but this has not happened. That has not happened yet. Before then. That's like later developments. And what he says is that he recruits Radu to work for Department Zero. And Radu is a free agent at that point. But he recruits him to work for Department Zero because the people in the intelligence service who followed Radu's trip as much as they could to Transylvania when he then went to Tibet, I mean, they knew about it from whatever surveillance they do. They knew that he had met with the Lama. But they wanted him to work for Department Zero because he was the last known person to speak to Rinpoche Sundi, the Lama. And because he was the last person known, they considered this a great value. And he says, look it, he tells that general, Obadiah, who's now passed away when they take him to the Alpha base, he says, I was the last one to see him, but I can't get him. I mean, I'm not going to help you. It doesn't matter. In other words, he just got himself sort of a security clearance by knowing this Lama. So what they did with him, they actually recruited him, and he became part of this expedition. And there's a lot of jibber-jabber, which is quite interesting about this and this, and some of the technology they allude to, like he actually has to put on shoes that are bio-resonant with the environment, and they sort of feed back. And the most interesting part I found on the computer was a character named Aiden, who is sent with the team that goes on the expedition, and he has a laptop computer that's not like most laptops, but when he opens it, or it doesn't quite open like ours does, but it's the keyboard is holographic and the display is holographic.
Wow.
Which is great science fiction, but, and this is, of course, being worked on in computeries at the most secret levels, but you got to remember that the holographic technology is what they're writing about from this chamber. So you don't know which is coming first or which is feeding which. But in any case, the holographic technology, it's like some secret technology from the Pentagon. It's based upon a crystal. He can't talk about it. But Aiden is like wired into the computer. He like thinks, he says it's like telepathy with the computer almost. And he's like super security. He's a security guy, specialist, and he can read code with the computer. But what's remarkable about the computer is he says the actual computer ties into Hilbert space. Now, Hilbert space is something that Preston could explain better, but it was a foundation of other mathematics, which include other dimensions. So you've got
maybe Preston could mention that a little bit just to explain it.
Go ahead, Preston.
Well, Hilbert basically was the first one to postulate the existence of parallel realities. And yes, the superstring and all that is based upon the Hilbert transforms.
So I guess these do exist.
Yeah, that's all mathematics. It's all mathematics from like the 1920s.
Wow.
Hilbert goes way back.
Oh. Yeah, and much of the stuff David Anderson, I mean, he studied all that stuff, and he would see modern-day physicists pontificating about how they did this and this, and he would laugh. He'd say, this is totally, they're grandstanding, because it all comes out of stuff from the, the 40s. He was talking about wormholes come out of the 40s. It wasn't created at JPL, these theories. But so this stuff is very sound mathematically. What's been problematic is the application of it or the hidden application of it. But
now, did this all originate with Nikola Tesla?
Yes and no.
Yeah. A brilliant mind.
Nikola Tesla had a whole different concept. Tesla was not going into parallel reference frames. He was more involved in very early electricity and early communications.
Yeah. It's just amazing the geniuses that came out of that period of time in the 20s and 30s, including Einstein, great physicists. What were they smoking back then, or what was the reason for what created this kind of awareness,
Probably either hashish or cigarettes, tobacco.
Yeah. I wonder. Something dawned on these two guys, three or four or five or how many other scientists.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I see that. It is a time where we're making, I think we're trying to make communications with the inner earth, people. And I think, Peter, with your work and the materials that you've been able to get out there, it talks about the inner earth and how we're finally hooking up with them. What do you think?
Well, certainly, the literature about the inner earth has come a little more full circle, but it is obvious in this new book, and as David Anderson says, so much of the technology of warfare these days, or the know-how of warfare, is all about censorship. It's all about who can censor who, and so this is what we're dealing with. As much knowledge as we've gained over the last 20 years in this field, since I, started collaborating with Preston and met George, it's like we've learned so much, but so much of it is based upon manipulation even to this day. What is even these protests in New York? There's a whole you know, string of manipulation involved with this, with the whole UFO sort of stuff. It's like UFOs get more sophisticated as mankind's technology gets more sophisticated. So you have to wonder, you know, is the dog chasing the tail or the other way around?
Good point.
Go ahead.
You've known me over the years and my relationship with extraterrestrials, aliens. And, you know, I focused in, I think, on the inner Earth because that's the terrestrial, not the extraterrestrial life that we live with. And, you know, so much of our legend and so forth talk about the people that live in the inner Earth. And I think we're at a point where we've made some real forward advances in not only believing them, but acknowledging, I think, some of the technology that they have at their fingers and that we have at our fingers, just like interdimensional crafts that go right through the Earth.
Well, yes, and yes, exactly, and so much stuff in our in legends point the direction in extraterrestrials, and too few times the government theories have pointed it to interterrestrials. So obviously, like if all these books that that I've published from Romania are true at all, it's saying that this technology is all coming from the inner Earth, or certainly a great amount of it. If it's highly advanced, it goes back 50,000 years. So, you know, what is the driving force? It's there's much more. I guess what you could conclude is there's much more driving this universe than mankind's, you know, last 6,000 years. Yet we live in a paradigm where the authorities feed this 6,000 year theme, which is very backwards. It's very, you know, I mean, I guess what you call a very stuck viewpoint, and access to the truth, you know, it's kind of like if you were living your life or a business and you're only allowed to think back 3 weeks of the entire business, you know, if you were working for some big company like Johnson & Johnson said, okay, this company has a history of three weeks. And you'd have to be pretty dumbed down to not know the whole history.
Peter, yes. I believe right now is that illusion that we live by and have been controlled by has been released, and it's out into the open where the illusion is exposed for what it is. And I think that's where people are actually being able to think for themselves. I mean, it's going to take a while for them to accept.
There's too many of them.
A lot of the possibilities that are happening right now. And I say that because, you know, there are so many different fractal understandings that are being played out. You know, it's you can't even count them.
So, well, did your, I think we hit 7 billion this last couple of days, 7 billion people. On the planet.
Most of them Chinese.
but we have done that. So I don't know. It seems like the world it seems like we seem to be working more on one frequency these days.
Well, we certainly have a lot of people protesting with Occupy Wall Street all over the globe.
Yeah.
So,
and, you know, Arab Spring.
So do you think that that's a product of some kind of mind control?
You mentioned Occupy Wall Street. You thought it might be rigged, but...
Be rigged in what way? I was curious.
Well,
what you
first were... off, it wouldn't be hard to get rid of those people if they wanted to get rid of them. It wouldn't be hard at all with, you know, the psychotronic technology to, you know, bombard them with frequencies and make them want to go away, and you don't see them. I didn't really show the protests on TV. They might show them on the internet. I don't know if they've even used horses. They can roll tanks right out of there if they wanted to get rid of those people.
They can go down the street on horseback.
They used horseback the other day in a corralling system where they take gates and corral people.
But but the one thing is, what's the typical MO of the government is to sort of start something and list all your enemies or your potential enemies, and because they know that people are not very happy with and then you have these very insensitive commentators like Lou Dobbs saying these people should go out and get a job. Well, that's what the whole protest is about.
That's what that's what they're talking about. We would like to be able to pay our student loans back, but you know what? There's no possibility of a job ever.
And people would like to keep their houses, but all of a sudden they're worth half of what they bought them for,
And
what I think these people, I mean, it's almost like they should have learned a foreign language so that they can go to India and get a job and make peanuts, but it might not be peanuts there. I don't know. I'm not saying that that's the way it should be, but it's almost like that's what they're being fed to them because it's very unfortunate. But I'm saying is the MO of the government is to they've become very sophisticated since losing the Vietnam War. I mean, they have become very sophisticated. If you watch the military channel, if you watch how they think, how the war college goes and this sort of stuff, they have very, I mean, they've studied Chinese Sun Tzu and all this. So they're very sophisticated. They have computers at their aid, and they predict all eventualities. So the way is you stick in perpetrators. I've heard that the police will do this. You stick in somebody to foment violence. And then that guy foments violence, and then the police come in, but that guy's long gone because he just did it. And then the police come down like gangbusters and say, oh, there's violence. It's a way to control. So, I mean, they have many ways to control the crowd, and they could really get rid of them if they really wanted to. I'm not sure that they want to. I think they try to make it a controlled protest as much as possible. I didn't even hear about it for 3 weeks, yet I watched the MSNBC channel is almost on full time in my office. So I'm watching financial news and I'm getting conspiracy stuff fed to me in my email account, and they weren't even mentioning these protests. I finally found out about it from a friend in Michigan who was telling me about it. I said, I didn't know about it. She
was
amazed.
It was on the internet, but not on mainstream TV.
No, we've been following it since it started.
Yeah.
And we've had friends that have actually gone down there and taken part of it and done some filming and on YouTube.
Yes, you're right. If they wanted to get rid of it, they certainly could. What does it serve as their purpose?
But it's growing bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It's not something that's
A lot of people have said that it's based on the Arab Spring, but those people don't realize is that the Arab Spring was a revolution made for export in America.
Yeah.
And now we control all those countries.
Well, it's a Facebook revolution, and if you look at the guy who created Facebook and study up on him, he has all the profiles of a Montauk boy. And it's
very, very tied into the CIA, I guess.
And his mom was a shrink. So it's there's either more theories that, I mean, even see Goldman Sachs was trying to sell Facebook for like $10 billion to some Arab in Saudi Arabia who was going to buy it so to prevent the revolution. And then Goldman Sachs got really soured on shortly after January when that thing didn't come through, and then the riots started, and the riots kind of fizzled out as far as the media was concerned.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to do something here tonight. I want to plug your two books and the one coming. What's the name of your new book?
The Transylvanian Sunrise and Transylvanian Moonrise are the two books that I have co-authored with Radu Sinemar. And the third book is Mystery of Egypt, the First Tunnel. They call it Romanian. Tunnel.
You can get
those,
right, USA?
Say that again? Skybooksusa.com. Yeah, that book should be... I should be taking orders for it in January.
We just have one minute.
But 1 minute left, actually 40 seconds. And I wanted to thank everybody before. We still got time. We're recording after this, but it'll be on the archives. But I just wanted to thank everybody And we have another caller that came in, 972, which we'll pick up right now before he closes. And then, but I wanted to thank Preston and George and, of course, Pete. And
it's a tribute to Al Bielek.
Yeah.
And I hope he's been listening to it.
Yeah.
Do you think he has, guys?
Yep.
We're going to be going into the archives now, going into recording time. So good night, those of you who are not hooked up. Okay. So
who is our caller?
Yeah, I wonder if that's good evening, 972. Would you like to join us?
Yeah, I was waiting until you were going off the air before I talked. I didn't have too much to contribute. I have spoken with Preston before on the telephone, as well as Peter in years past, but I wanted to call and talk about. How you doing, George? I want to talk about that reality, alternate reality that you were speaking about earlier, and see if I could put it in a context that makes it easier to understand.
Okay.
If you think about déjà vu as being an event and the memory of event in close proximity to one another, which one is reality and which one is an artificial reality?
They're all artificial.
Well, when you answer the question and you come up with the idea that all matter and everything in our reality is comprised of thought, and we have 7 billion people with different minds here, it's no wonder we have so many separate and distinct realities. It's hard to get people to agree.
Go to the head of the class, Rod.
No, you know what's interesting, though, is it seems like there's only maybe four or five of them that are recognized as universal realities. In other words, maybe you can go by the countries, but basically the media, the military, the United States, Europe, they're all different realities. But you can actually list them, and they don't seem to be indefinite. But everybody seems to understand those certain topics, have experience in each reality. What's your take on that? How many realities are there? Infinite numbers?
No, there's not infinite numbers. There's places where we agree and places where we don't disagree. Remember when Jung talked about the mastermind and the supermind, where you get several people together talking, thinking about the same thing? It adds power to the thought.
You agree in the supermind, yeah.
And then in one of the books George exposed me to, Concentration, Mani Sadhu talked about how you're able to use a single mind to burn a hole in a piece of paper if you practice for a while. The actual power of thought.
Well, it's like I always marvel at that statement of whenever two or more of you are gathered in my name. In other words, Christ said, whenever two or more of you are gathered in my name, then you can bring him back to life. You know.
Yeah, he's present. You actually have a Trinity there if you want to look at it that way.
Right, he becomes present, and I thought. I always thought that was amazing because that's the power of two and multiples, my power of three, four, five. But if you have 7 billion people with one world vision, it obviously will manifest. You know, it'd be amplified enough to manifest, I guess.
That's a beautiful thought. Now let me
jump
in here
if I can. What happens after you don't have any more energy to keep that thought or that consciousness alive? What happens when the original artist dies? Does his art die with him?
Yeah, it does if he burns it, if it winds up burning or if it winds up being destroyed somehow.
Something's got to hold it together, and I'm just saying that it's the consciousness. If you don't have anything holding the consciousness together, it's just going to dissipate.
A counter-consciousness, George, and the counter-consciousness is the media. That's why it's so difficult to make change out here in the real world.
Yeah.
The media is feeding people thoughts and they're accepting them blindly without thinking, but at the same time they're adding the power of their mind to that, that thought and that reality.
Right.
That's right.
We have to,
we have to overcome that. And I've noticed over the years how people have used the Montauk Project and the Philadelphia Experiment, I think, to elaborate on the energies and the thoughts behind it, which gives it power, gives it life, and adds to it. And,
well, there you are, because what happened is what we're talking about, the thoughts and the power of thoughts, were introduced into the vortex of the Montauk and Philadelphia Experiment, and that's where it got the additional power to create that monster. Somebody just had a monster of the id, I guess you might call it, huh?
That's right, but, you know, it's like the talks that are going on tonight is what's keeping Junior there alive, and will be alive until the last thought connecting with it is gone.
Junior may end up being a friend after all.
May, but I'm thinking in understanding of the whole Montauk Project, you know, the operator actually produced the thought form and manifested it. But once you take the operator part, the energies just falls apart in the thought forms that he produced. And I'm talking about just basic thought form itself. You have to have something that holds it together.
And
now,
the same
understanding on the changes that we've made, who's to say that the memories of our past civilizations so far has been erased because the memory of the magnetics of the Earth has changed?
Brett, well, that's the best one to answer that, because he didn't remember he was a part of the Montauk Project at the beginning. I wonder if he has recovered any of those memories since.
Who is that?
Preston.
Preston?
Well, he was just asking if you'd recovered any memories since of Montauk. Actually, my experience, Preston recovers them all the time. They come and
yes.
go.
Yes.
But what you were saying about the Montauk can as well be applied to the Bible. It's one of the most, from a pure ritual magic, it's one of the more powerful magical spells that's been cast upon mankind. If you take it out of the context of religion and it being true and this, that, and the other thing, it's a great, powerful act of magic.
Oh, no question.
I agree with that 100%. I just wish it contained those other 40 books that they removed.
Oh, wow.
That might be, you know, part of the controlling or the manipulation. Because the Bible is written in very recent times in terms of the entire history of mankind. You know, it's kind of like us writing the 20th century from the perspective of 2000 forward.
It was revised in the 1700s, or no, 1600s actually, when they did the
King James.
King James, you know. And of course the Geneva Bible as well was the big one that they used. But but those two were the primary printed versions, you know.
Yeah, but you got this Living Bible now that the fundamentalists are using, and that's not even in agreement with the original.
What's the Living Bible?
It's the easy, friendly one to read that the fundamentalist churches here in Texas are using. One that is it's written on a third or fourth grade level of understanding, and they completely interpreted and in some cases misinterpreted many of the.
There's a lot of misinterpretation in that. I've seen that.
Yeah, there's some direct. They got it exactly backwards.
But
unfortunately.
One of my friends today, just today she said, she's I guess you'd call her a Christian. She knows the Bible very well, and she knows it psychically as well as literally. And she said to me that, you know, the Antichrist knows Scripture better than most anybody.
I would agree with that.
Interesting concept.
Yeah, that's
in some cases, he wrote it.
Yeah, exactly. But guys, I I'm so grateful that everybody appears tonight on the show, and I wanted to thank everybody again personally, Preston, for having had a great afternoon on that magic carpet there of yours. And did you want to announce that how people can do that kind of training, meditation?
Sure, I've already announced it a number of times.
Yep, your place is available to people. If you wanted to give out your phone number or your email for people to reach you.
Phone number.
Okay. Your phone number is 518-622-9397.
That's correct.
You can call Preston and get a chance to get on, talk to him and get on his, and he invites you down to have your sound meditation.
Actually, it's musical meditation.
Yeah, it's musical meditation. And it's an excellent thing. And I have anybody, I recommend it highly to anybody to try. And Peter, I want to thank you, and I'm looking forward to that new book really coming out. It should be out when, in January?
I would hope so. So call me, you know, or email me, or George, you know, around New Year's, and because I don't think I would, if things go very well, I don't even think I'd have it by the 1st of January. So, you know, call me so I can remember to send you a copy. And
I can't wait to see it. You know, we'll have you on and to discuss it, because I think you know, that the last two are great, and I suggest anybody buy them. You can. What were the names? What the two names?
Transylvanian Sunrise is the first one. The sequel is Transylvanian Moonrise.
And this one is
the Mystery of Egypt.
Right, and it's a fascinating set of books. So, and George, always a pleasure. It's great seeing you today. And you know, we'll be talking to George again tomorrow night, right here. Same time and same place. So, everybody, I guess, anybody else want to say anything? And Rod?
Oh, I want to say a sidebar to George. He keeps track of earthquakes. They had, it looks like a 4.6 just outside San Antonio, Texas today.
Wow.
Heard it on the news at 6 o'clock. That in addition to the ones they had around San Francisco, things are heating up.
Yeah, things are.
Yeah,
well, thank you for having us, Leo, and and bless Al.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's not forget we were tributing Al Bielek tonight, and this show will be available on archives in about 10 minutes. So please check it out and tell your friends. Thanks, guys. Thanks for being on.
Okay.
Good luck,
everybody.
Bye, everybody.
The pleasure is mine.
You're mine too, but Preston.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care, George.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
The line's still open.
Yeah, I'm trying to hang it up here. Here we go. I want to thank everybody who called tonight, and we hope you have a great tomorrow. Please join George Dixon and myself tomorrow night as we discuss the Mayan calendar.